I'm Andrew Haunt. Welcome to Andrew Haunt's Rock Revival. This is a show where I talk about old rock and metal albums from the 80s and 90s mainly, and riff on what those albums meant to me throughout my life and throughout my career as a music journalist. I'm not doing that anymore, but that was a lot of fun while it was going on. So this episode, I'm going to talk about Back for the Attack, the fourth album by Dokken. Now, this album means the world to me. This has been a huge part of my life since I was a very young kid, since I was about 12, to be honest. Now, Dokken came into my life through somewhat inappropriate channels by me seeing the movie A Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Warriors, the third in the series of Nightmare on Elm Street movies. And of course, the title track from that movie, Dream Warriors, was by Dokken. It played over the closing credits, and I loved that song. Back in the day, I did record it from the VHS tape by putting a tape recorder in front of the TV and just recording the closing credits to the movie so I could keep the song after the tape went back to the video store. That ages me somewhat. I know, I understand that. So, originally released in 1987, this fourth album from Dokken took a bit of a different direction from what had gone before. So with the first couple of albums, the self-titled album and Tooth and Nail, Dokken were a much more straightforward hard rock band. And they moved on to what would be considered their watershed album, Under Lock and Key, that had the huge hit on there. Come on, you know the hit I'm talking about. It's In My Dreams. It also had tracks like The Hunter on there, Lightning Strikes Again, that were hugely popular Dokken songs. Even today, still popular songs for Dokken here and now. But it's the album that followed that, Back for the Attack, from 1987, that really stuck with me. And not just because of the Nightmare on Elm Street connection. It stuck with me because it's a really damn fine hard rock album. In all honesty, it almost borders on like melodic metal, not just hard rock. And once I got this album, I got a secondhand vinyl copy from Powerhouse Records in Sheffield, which later became Noise and Noise, and then disappeared altogether, unfortunately. Mainly because it had Dream Warriors on it. But when I played it, the first track that came out, the opening track of Back for the Attack, Kiss of Death, I was absolutely sold. The main riff, Kiss of Death, that wonderful staccato riff, that's also it's quite cyclic, so it repeats through the song, instantly had me hooked. I love the bite of the guitar for it, the huge hook of the chorus, and of course George Lynch's ridiculous and wonderful solo, very varied, almost chaotic solo to that, but with so much feeling to it, to the playing, that it was unreal. So the lineup for this album, of course, was Don Dokken on vocals, George Lynch on guitar, Jeff Pilson on bass, and Wild Mick Brown on drums. It is the classic Dokken lineup, and they were absolutely on fire with this album. It's one of those albums where I feel anyway, a band gets it right. You know, every band has one of those albums where, okay, they found what they should be doing here. This is ideal. It was exactly what I wanted from an album at the time. I wanted the flashy guitar, pyrotechnics. I wanted the enormous choruses. I wanted the high-pitched falsetto vocals. Again, this was, like I said previously in the first episode, that I found all this music during the height of the grunge and alternative era, and it just blew my mind that this stuff existed, and it felt like it was for me. And that's an interesting thing I find about rock music. You know, these musicians write the songs, they record the songs, perform them around the world, put these albums out, you know, to get their message out, to get their art out there and to make some money. And these things become artifacts in listeners' lives. They become markers along the way of someone's life. And Back for the Attack is definitely a big marker for me. It's one of the rare albums that I have in multiple formats. CD, vinyl, download. And it's an extremely special album. So following Kiss of Death, the pace is taken down a little bit, but with some very interesting lead work as a main hook along with the chorus, Prisoner. It's a really good song. With a great hook to the chorus, "Prisoner Chained by Love." It's very 80s. The lyric, the whole thing is very of its time, but utterly, utterly addictive. This is followed by "Night by Night," which is a great song. It's a little more subdued than the first two. Of course, after the barrage of Kiss of Death and the huge rock song of "Prisoner," "Night by Night," it's a little bit more laid back. It's a little bit more of like a late night feel. This is followed by "Standing in the Shadows," which takes the pace up again a bit, has a bit more impact than "Night by Night" did. So, out of those four songs, none of them are particularly short. In fact, this album is a really long album by these standards. It's 13 tracks, and not one track is underneath 4 minutes long. I think the shortest track on there is 4 minutes 19. And the longest, let's have a look there. The longest there is 5:51, which is "Kiss of Death" itself. So that does the album. It takes its time, and there's a lot to process here. And there's a lot going on. It's 13 tracks long, and it doesn't entirely work for the whole duration of that album. But we'll get to that anyway. So after "Standing in the Shadows," the pace goes down again with "Heaven Sent," but that is fabulous. It's not quite a ballad. It's still a rock song. It doesn't take the pace down too much, but it does show a little slightly more melodic side to what they're doing on "Back to the Attack." It's interesting. Again, there's some beautiful melodies there. The writing of the band is very evident. There's some things in there, like Jeff Pilson. You can tell Jeff Pilson has his influence on this song just through the melody of it. It's wonderful. Now, after "Heaven Sent," on the track six is "Mr. Scary." Now, that's the last track on the first side of the vinyl version of "Back from the Attack," and it is George Lynch's signature tune, the irresistible instrumental that has that riff. You know the one I mean. If you don't, go and listen to "Mr. Scary," the original version of "Mr. Scary" from this album, and you'll understand what I mean and why George Lynch became such an iconic guitar player to me listening to this album. It's just fantastic, and it's hugely theatrical, and it does have a bit of a horror movie soundtrack to it, and you don't quite know where it's going to go, but it is a wonderful piece of composition, and there's tons of shredding on it that made me very happy. So on to side two, track seven, "Be So Many Tears." Bit more of a standard rock song. It's almost tipping 5 minutes again at 4 minutes 56, so it is a little bit on the long side. And just where you think that's the start, the album has peaked and it's going to be downhill from there. You get two tracks back to back, which are excellent: "Burning Like a Flame" and "Lost Behind the Wall." Now, both of these are wonderful rock songs. They build on what came before with "Under Lock and Key" and everything that Doc had done before, and they do show a definite progression. The band had tried to do something more mature, more complex, not so straightforward as previous albums. What I do appreciate with this is that they hadn't just rested on their laurels and put out an album that was just, 10 versions of "In My Dreams." They could have done that, but they didn't. They did something that was much more in keeping with them, and some might say in keeping with their somewhat chaotic nature, of course, which led eventually to putting out an album out called "Dysfunctional," which just says it all, really. But band politics aside, this is a superb album. So after "Lost Behind the Wall," you've got "Stop Fighting Love," followed by "Cry the Gypsy." "Cry the Gypsy" has an enormous, enormous chorus to it and keeps the interest going. "Sleepless Night" didn't really grab me that much, mainly because it's the track before "Dream Warriors" was on the album. So I just wanted it out of the way. It's not a bad song, it just never really grabbed me. And then you've got "Dream Warriors." Now, I'm convinced, I don't entirely know this, I really should read up on this. I'm convinced that the album version of "Dream Warriors" is not the version of the song that was used on the Nightmare on Elm Street 3 soundtrack. If it's the same recording, I'm sure it had a different mix. It may just be my ears and brain, my poor adult brain, playing tricks on me, but I am sure that that was at least a different mix of the song, and I will track that down at some point. Yeah, the album, It's too long. There are a couple of songs that it could do with leaving out. Personally, I would have left out Night by Night and Sleepless Night, just because they mess a little bit with the pace of the album. But, you know, it is what it is, and Mordokken, hey, I'm not complaining. It still walks all over a lot of stuff that was out at the time. It still does, to be honest. I still love this album. It was produced and engineered by Neil Kernan, and while it is an excellent album, the songwriting is excellent. I do find that there isn't much mid-range in the sound of it. The production doesn't have much meat to it. There's not much bass to it. And the guitar is a little bit tinny. But I personally, I can let that slide because it's just so damn good. So I still listen to this. I listened to it for many years after growing up. And throughout my life, it still got spun. When I became a music journalist, I did have the pleasure of interviewing two of the people that were on this album for separate interviews. The first one was George Lynch, who I interviewed for in support of his album Kill All Control, which was just released under the George Lynch name. And that was a very different album. It still had George Lynch's signature playing all over it, but there were some darker elements to that. I believe it was going to be another Salt and Wee album. The album was superb. Kill All Control. But the main thing for me was getting to interview George Lynch, and he was really nice, very gracious, very friendly, very open man. The interview was a little bit late, and he was apologising profusely that he was late because he'd just been out shopping with the kids and the family. And I think it's so sweet. I always loved to get these little glimpses of normal life for these people that are just icons to me. Even just a few seconds of a glimpse of a normal life, I find absolutely fascinating. So he hung out with me for half an hour on the phone, you know, went through all the stuff about the new album and his career and whatnot. But what I really found interesting was the story about his studio in the desert. I did ask if it was true that he had a studio in the middle of the desert. And yeah, he told me that was a real thing. He had built a studio literally in the middle of nowhere. Where he could stay, he could go over and stay and record and hang out. But it allowed him to walk out in the desert surrounding the studio with a guitar and play as loud as possible. And that's just awesome. That is such a great thought. It does bring to mind the shot of Slash in the November Rain video, walking away from the church there with the guitar outside. And you can just imagine George Lynch stood atop some rocky outcropping in the desert, just rocking out. And that just makes me happy. But he was a very, very nice guy to talk to. And we did touch on the docking years and how that had all gone down. And it was just a wonderful experience. And later on, when Bookham came back with the album Hell to Pay, Don Levin on guitar for that one, I got to interview Don Dokken himself. And that was quite a different interview. That was still every bit as much of an honour, because, you know, I'd grown up listening to this guy, and I wanted to spend some time with talking to him. I spoke to him while he was in a hotel room. It was a very different experience to talking to George Lynch. It wasn't like, I won't say he was subdued, but I could tell he was feeling a bit worn out from the amount of press he'd been having to do for this album. So we sat there, we talked about the album, we talked about his issues he'd had with his throat, we talked about the history of the band and so on. I had mentioned that I'd interviewed George and he brought him up and so on. And he talked a little about the dysfunctional family feel that Dokken had had pretty much since their inception in the late 1970s. And it was fascinating. As that interview closed, Don was fed up and was bored, and from what I remember, and just wanted to hang out and talk for a bit. So we carried on chatting just about life after the interview ended. That's some stuff that I didn't include in the interview in the issue of Power Play that it came out in, but he just wanted to hang out, and I was more than happy to do that. He's a really, really pleasant man to talk to, and he's still going strong now. Some people do complain about his voice, that it doesn't sound like it does in the 80s, but crying out loud, the 80s were a long time ago now. As much as I love the 80s, you know, there's no getting away from the fact that they are getting further and further away from us. And same with George Lynch. When I was interviewing George Lynch, I was talking about the progression in his playing and how some people may complain that he doesn't play the same way as he did back then. And he agreed with me that you stagnate otherwise. You know, if you don't move on, you just stagnate. And when a musician stagnates, that's where the the artistry slips, the quality slips, and, you know, no one listens anymore. All of this, all of these wonderful experiences, they all stemmed from my love for Back for the Attack. I did get to see George Lynch play once. I've not seen Don Dokken play, but I have seen Lynch Mob play at Firefest here in Nottingham. Firefest is a... I'm going to have to do an episode on just Firefest itself, because that was a wonderful experience. Seeing him play live in front of me was just unreal. The Lynch Mob material sounded fantastic live. Dokken stuff sounded fantastic live. Strange thing, what I do remember from that is that that gig had been running behind due to a problem with the mixing desk earlier in the day. So everything was running behind, and Lynch Mob were headlining the end of the evening that night. And after that, it was going to be the Halloween club night at Rock City. And because of that run over, they decided just to start letting the Halloween club night people in. So I had this experience of seeing George Lynch, iconic guitar player, I'd wanted to see since being a child. Absolutely wonderful, you know, life-defining moment seeing him play in front of me. And I looked over to my right and saw a 6-foot-tall young gentleman dressed in a banana costume. So all those years, I thought, oh, I would love to see George Lynch play. Finally got the chance to, and I spent it beside an enormous banana. You couldn't make this up. That was an experience I will never forget, though. I mean, the playing of George Lynch rather than the banana. But yeah, that was weird, mate. Back for the Attack, it remains a very important album to me. A hugely influential album throughout my life. And I don't see myself stopping listening to it anytime soon. I know the band has moved on since then. I know all the members of the band have moved on to different things. Dokken's still going. George Lynch is doing about a million different things. One of them, in fact, I was listening to earlier tonight, The End Machine. The new album, Phase 2, is just fabulous. Do check that out. But I'm grateful I've had these experiences that a lot of people don't get to enjoy. And I've really enjoyed them, and I've reveled in them. And it's always nice to be able to tell people afterwards that these stars, these icons, these people that had meant so much to me turned out to be really cool people. You know, and that is just like the icing on the cake. But anyway, it's getting late. I think I'm going to have to go and spin Back for the Attack again before bed. Thank you for listening to Andrew Horn's Rock Revival. I'll be back with you with another episode very soon.